Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit ClassicalSpecialNeeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
We had to pretend to be buyers of these parts. And so some would say, well, you're lying.
I think that undercover work is actually fundamentally different from lying, because the purpose of undercover work is actually to serve the truth.
Coming out does not require as much courage as is required by a person who says, you know, I feel same-sex attraction, but what I want to do is not act on it. What I want to do is live up to my church's teaching.
All I know is that I'm died for by Jesus. I'm baptized and I'm forgiven. And God, I am the possessor of God's promises and his kingdom and his spirit and his life. And that is who I am. So I don't have to love myself. Jesus loves me.
Wisconsin snowplow drivers love Issues, etc.
It is actually possible to change your mind on a subject like this. Although, if you look at the so-called abortion debate today, it would seem impossible, but many people have done it. There are many who were swept up in the early days of feminism and bought the line that the only path to equality with men was the ability of women to undo a pregnancy. And that's kind of the way it was thought of, to roll back the clock on a pregnancy so that they wouldn't get in the way of their career, their aspirations, or their earning potential. That way, they could be equal with men. And then later, the same people, so supportive of abortion, stop to think for a moment about what abortion really does to the unborn and to women, and their minds change. We've got a story to tell just about that here in the first part of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, January the 28th. We're going to talk about a change of mind on abortion with Frederica Matthews Green, author of the book Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. A little bit later, Dr. Jean Edward Veith will join us. It's National Lutheran Schools Week, part four of our five-part daily series on Lutheran education. Today we'll talk about Lutheran education and vocation. Then Terry Mattingly of Get Religion will join us. Pope Francis recently made some comments, issued a statement on social media, internet communities, and trolling. He didn't call it trolling, but that's what he was talking about. We'll see what the Pope had to say and how it was covered by the press with Terry Mattingly. And then we'll find Christ in the Old Testament in Jeremiah chapter 1 with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Joining us to talk about a change of mind on abortion, Frederica Matthews Green. She's a regular guest, author of the book Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion, and a recent column for National Review Online titled When Abortion Suddenly Stopped Making Sense. Frederica, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. How good to be back with you again.
You say in your article that abortion is like a funnel. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I meant that it looks like it's the perfect solution for just about everybody around the pregnant woman. It looks like it'll solve all the problems at once. If she just goes and does go off by herself and do this thing, then it's not going to embarrass her parents with an unexpected pregnancy. It's not going to inconvenience the father of the child. Won't affect her job, won't affect her college scholarship. It looks so inviting because it looks like a simple, you know, one-time solution to all the problems. And then, of course, the woman is left with that knowledge for the rest of her life. Maybe everybody else forgets it, but she doesn't necessarily.
So you were a college student at the time of Roe v. Wade back in 1973, and you thought very differently at the time about abortion. What were your thoughts on it? How did it fit into your worldview at the time?
Yes, it was a strange thing because in the early days of the women's liberation movement, as we called it then, there were so many things that we were concerned about. Particularly, we thought there was sexism in advertisements that used images of women's bodies in ads. I mean, there were so many different things we were interested in. And the issue of abortion and making abortion legal was just one in a whole list. But it ended up being the most important issue, I think, because it was political. and because it was something where you could actually see results. And with other things that had to do with changing attitudes, and that's always harder to do. So somehow this issue of abortion became the definitive women's liberation issue. And we thought of it as necessary for women to be able to compete with men in the marketplace. Men are never pregnant, so therefore if women want to have jobs and be professionals, we need to be never pregnant. We just accepted the male model as the standard, and we're willing to adapt ourselves to it physically instead of changing society, making the changes inside the woman's body. So I was very strongly in favor of abortion. I thought that the unborn child was just what we used to say, a glob of tissue. I didn't think of it as really being human or alive. And we also thought that abortion wouldn't be used very much because it was such a grim experience. So there are many things there that I was startled to learn the truth about later on.
When you did, tell us about that. You said you were just paging through one of your dad's magazines when you're home on vacation from college.
Yeah, of all things, my dad had a subscription to Esquire magazine, not a place where you'd think you'd run into a pro-life essay. But this was 1976. I was home from grad school. I was looking through the magazine. I came across an article that was titled, What I Saw at the Abortion. And it was a short, just a two-page essay. And the author, Richard Selzer, who was himself a doctor, said that he was in favor of abortion rights, so to speak, but he'd never seen an abortion. He didn't know what it really was. So he asked a colleague, next time you do an abortion, can I go along just to see it? And so he described this abortion that was being done on a woman who was 19 weeks pregnant, which admittedly is very late, middle of pregnancy. Usually abortions are done by the 10th or 12th week. She was lying on the table in the operating room, and his friend, the doctor, put a syringe directly through her abdomen into the womb and injected it with a prostaglandin solution that would burn the baby's skin, burn the insides of its lungs, cause the baby to go into convulsions, cause the uterus to begin contracting and bring about an abortion or a miscarriage. And so Dr. Selzer, watching this happen, said he saw something he didn't think he was going to see, which was that the hub of the needle that was left standing upright in the woman's abdomen, the hub of the syringe began to jerk back and forth violently. He said like a fishing line that's being tugged by a fish. It began to jerk back and forth, and he realized that was the baby dying. That was the baby trying to fight off this thing that was trying to steal its life away. That was the death agonies of this child. As horrifying as it was to see the needle shaking back and forth, it was almost more horrifying to see that gradually slow down and then cease as the child's life was taken away. And he ended up saying, very briefly, he said, it really doesn't matter what you say about abortion, however you try to defend abortion, because I will never forget seeing that child trying to defend its life. And there's no way, there's nothing you could say, nothing mere words could say can fight against the truth of what I saw that day. So this was a very disturbing and very shocking thing for me to read, because as a typical hippie feminist of the early 1970s, I was anti-war and anti-death penalty and marching against Vietnam. I was vegetarian. I did all those things because I believed that violence was wrong. And here it turned out I had accepted an act of violence into the very center of my feminism. This could not be called anything but violence, and there I was claiming that it was necessary for women to be equal with men.
So your mind changed there, and really what changed it was the sign of life even as the child was being put to death. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes, yes, that's a very good way of saying it. That an image that came to me later was I thought about if there was a homeless man freezing on the sidewalk and you took away his blanket. you could say, was just a ratty old blanket. I didn't steal anything important. But it was all he had. And for this child, you know, people can say, well, it doesn't have memory, it doesn't have consciousness, it doesn't have intelligence, doesn't have this, doesn't have that. But what it has is the will to live. And that is what you're taking away. You're taking away the only thing that unborn human being has, the will to live. And that was the injustice of it that was so deeply disturbing to me.
You talk about how nobody wants an abortion like they want a Porsche or an ice cream cone. They want it in a different sense. And in the end, I mean, it's hard to believe that any woman, except perhaps the most sadistic, could possibly really want something like this for herself, even if she's not considering the life of her unborn child. And yet, you say, 2,800 a day, you say that this represents not a liberation for women, but a strange new form of oppression. Talk about that.
Yes, yes, because people on both sides of the abortion debate agree, if we just put it in quote marks, women don't want to have abortions. And so if women are doing something they don't want to do 2,800 times every day, then this is not liberation. Then this is a new form of oppression that we have colluded in, that we have sought out, that we have championed, that we have hailed as if it were a victory, when all it is altering a woman's body, stopping a healthy process, which is what pregnancy is, and destroying her own child under this illusion that somehow that gave us liberation. The numbers of injustices there are staggering, but it's also so cruel to the woman, because this is a very unnatural thing to go through, and it is, this child is her child as much as any child she'll ever have in her life. And society should not expect that of her, should not expect her to be willing to give up her own son, her own daughter, just in order to, quote, be able to compete with men in the marketplace. Instead of changing society, we decided to change women's bodies. And that's where the injustice lies.
A couple questions here. I mean, this, it's difficult for me to imagine, but what would feminism be in America today if it had not latched onto abortion as its sine qua non?
Yes, I think that one thing we could do is go back 150 years or so and see when feminism was not fighting about abortion, but was fighting for the right to vote of women. You know, again, that was a situation where it seemed like there were a lot of concerns. Feminism was not so much trying to compete women against men, but they were asserting that the things that are distinctive about women, we might even say about femininity, though that's almost a curse word these days, that there are things that are distinctive and wonderful about women and should be valued rather than being scoffed at or dismissed. So they were looking for respect for women, as distinct from men. Like that time 150 years ago, the thing they ended up latching onto was the right to vote, because it was material in a sense. It wasn't philosophical. It wasn't a matter of trying to gradually change the way people think about women, although that's just so hard to do, and it's impossible to measure your success. But they did have this one thing they could fight for that was political. They wanted to get that amendment to the Constitution. It took them 75 years or so. And then what happened after that? After women won the right to vote in 1920, if you look back through history, it's like, where did it go? Where did the women's movement go after that? Without something to paint a banner about and march in the streets for, it was kind of hard for it to retain cohesion and motivation. And, you know, I think that's what happened as we get up to the early 60s and we get some of the early feminist writers. Again, there's a lot of Sturm und Drang. There's a lot of a churning and desire for change, but it's kind of unfocused until they land on this new issue that is measurable and political. It's very hard to imagine what the feminist movement would be like if it had not settled on that one goal. Perhaps it would have settled on a different political type goal. But without that, it's hard for any movement to even see what it's doing if all of its goals are merely cultural or soft goals that have to do with redirecting attention. I guess in all these years since Roe v. Wade, the fact that pro-lifers have fought against it have continued to give it the quality of urgency that a movement needs in order to hang together and to remain energetic. I go to the March for Life every year. I live not too far from Washington, and I can't tell you how much younger that movement gets. Seems like every year there are more high school students and college students, and fewer of the gray-haired people like me. It's very exciting to see that there's a younger generation that sees very clearly the injustice and the violence of abortion and is very firmly resolved against it.
Frederica Matthews-Green is our guest. We're talking about a change of mind on abortion. Is that then the thin end of the wedge, a generation that finds abortion unthinkable coming up? We'll be right back.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, January the 28th, we're talking about a change of mind on abortion. Frederica Matthews-Green is our guest, author of the book Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion, and a recent column for National Review Online titled, When Abortion Suddenly Stopped Making Sense. Before the break, Frederica, you were talking about the young people at the March for Life, and you know, the goal always has been not to make abortion only illegal, but really unthinkable. Do you see them as that narrow end of the wedge, these young people who can't even imagine it?
Yes. Yes, I think that the way that young men and women recoil from abortion, there's something that's honest, isn't there, about that just on a gut level. That is how we should react. And I think a lot of it is attributable to the fact of the sonogram becoming available. You know, when we were being loudly pro-abortion those 40 years ago, we really didn't see pictures of life in the womb. And now when people think about abortion, they think about the sonograms that someone has shown to them. This is so much a part of the lives of the younger generation that abortion no longer looks to them like something they fight for so women can be free. It looks like something that is being done to them, to their own generation. One out of every five seats in a high school classroom is, in a sense, is empty. One in every five seats in a college classroom is empty because about one in every five pregnancy gets aborted. And anybody under the age of 43 could have been aborted. You start feeling like you have a great big red X on your chest when you realize that your generation has been decimated in this way and how many lives have been lost. It no longer looks like the woman is the victim here. Now we see that the woman is being co-opted in order to sacrifice her own child, and the whole thing is so horrific.
What about the idea, and this also has its roots there in feminists, the feminists latching onto abortion. What about the idea of the unwanted child? What are your thoughts there, Frederica?
Yes, I've always been disturbed by the language about, you know, a child should be aborted because otherwise it would be unwanted. You know, in the first place, it's not true. There are long waiting lists for babies. Not so much for older children. They do have trouble getting adopted if they're 8 or 9 years old and have been in foster care a long time. That is a problem. But for newborns, there's an almost limitless demand. People who would love to have that child. So it may not be wanted by the biological parents, but it's very much wanted by someone else. But the other thing is the whole issue of wantedness being a criterion that allows somebody to be an unperson. It's such an unlikely thing for feminists to champion. One of the first messages that we latched onto in the early days of feminism was that women don't get their value from being wanted by men, that women have value in themselves for who they are. It doesn't disqualify you if men don't find you attractive, if you haven't snagged a man at some point in your life. You have value just as a human being. So it seems to me an unlikely principle for feminists to challenge that now we're saying your value in life depends completely on whether somebody else wants you. I think that kind of backfires on us and goes totally contrary to the things that we were saying in the early days of the movement.
I mean, it really just, to me, it screams a feminist who says my value isn't based upon what a man thinks of me or what someone else thinks of me. What about the woman in the womb?
If
feminism, to me, that's, Frederica, has been kind of the hope. If feminism could extend its concerns to the baby female in the womb, it could utterly be transformed into a great positive. What are your thoughts?
That is so true. And I would want to, give a hand to the organization Feminists for Life, which works very hard to do exactly that, to make the point that, you know, if you're saying it's my body, I should control my own body, you have to recognize that the being in the womb has a different DNA than you do. And it's a different body. It's a different person. And we want to protect that little girl or even that little boy on the very same grounds that we want to protect women from abuse at the hands of men. That child in the womb has every bit as much value and potential for living a full life. So it is very strange, I think, for feminists to pretend that unwantedness is gives permission for annihilation. Feminists for Life has done a great job over the years of presenting the secular feminist arguments against abortion. And that is exactly one of them, that little girl in the womb, she deserves the right to control her body too. And that means being allowed to keep her arms and legs attached to her body.
Do we have before us a threshold, however, and this is, I mean, beyond this, the darkness is so deep it's hard to imagine, where feminism says, of course it's a life, of course it's a baby, but you got to make a choice between yourself and him or her.
Yes, I have seen essays along that line from time to time, a feminist saying that, yes, we know it is a life, but I've heard this phrased as, men get to make life and death decisions every day on the battlefield. In other contexts, men are always making decisions about whether or not to take life. Well, why can't women make those decisions too? It's pretty chilling when you can kind of understand how someone might support abortion from not really thinking it through. It's when they think it through and they still think it's a good idea that it really becomes distressing. But they're stopping at the point of realizing, number one, that it is the woman's own child. It's not an enemy in wartime. It's not a homicidal criminal. It's actually her own child that she's sacrificing. And also at seeing that there's no grounds for taking this life. This child does not deserve to have its life taken. There's no rationale for it. Perhaps men on battlefields do make decisions about whether to shoot this particular person or not, but there is a rationale for that action, should he take it. There is no qualification for this child that makes it vulnerable to a death sentence.
Finally, then, are you hopeful that, as someone who once was, and I'll say, you know, largely ignorantly in favor of abortion, that this ignorance can be dispelled in more American women and men, of course, if we, it's sad to say, kind of learn the lesson you learned back in those early years of what abortion really does to both woman and child?
Yes, I really do feel hopeful. I'd say for three reasons, one of which is I was so hard-headed on this issue that if something could get through to me, it can get through to anybody. So I do see there's potential for minds to be changed. Secondly, I think there's not as much potential for baby boomers to change their mind on this as there is for younger generations to grow up seeing what's wrong with it. And we see this, how many times in the media is there a movie in which there's an unplanned pregnancy, there's a lot of distress. So what does she decide? Think of Juno. She goes ahead and has the baby, right? She never has an abortion because that's a bad story. That's an unhappy story. The story's about her heroism and joy and bringing good out of evil, even. Those are all stories where the pregnancy goes through and the child is born. So the younger generation and their fresher way of looking at this is my second reason for hope. And the third is the pregnancy care centers across this land, many of them in St. Louis itself, right there, that work to help women in crisis pregnancies find the resources they need in order to give birth to their child. Those are three reasons that I think we can continue seeing the numbers of abortions drop, as it has been dropping over many, many years, and see a gradual turnaround in the thoughts, thinking about abortion, especially among the younger generation.
Frederica Matthews Green is author of the book Real Choices, Listening to Women Looking for Alternatives to Abortion, and a recent column for National Review Online titled When Abortion Suddenly Stops Making Sense. You'll find a link to this book and to the article at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Frederica, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks so much, Todd. Enjoyed talking with you.
When we come back, it is Thursday of National Lutheran Schools Week. We're going to do part four of our five-part daily series on Lutheran education today. Lutheran Education and Vocation. Dr. Jean Edward Veith, author of the book God at Work, Your Christian Vocation and All of Life, will be our guest.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
O Lord, open my lips.
And my mouth will declare your praise.
Listen to chapel services live
weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Defend us from all evil and bring us to everlasting life.
Amen. LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is the law the opposite of the gospel? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Is the Law Bad? Some Myths About God's Law. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read about Tim Wood's journey from many different Christian confessions to the sound and seamless theology of the Lutheran Confession, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
In Hosea 4, we read, My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us and encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.